Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So yesterday, a number of Democrats here in the Pennsylvania State House and Senate held an event calling for renewable energy here in Pennsylvania. A renewable future. They want to get to 100% renewable energy by the year 2050. And look, you know, while that's only a couple of years down the road, we need to do things a lot faster and a lot sooner. But this is a start, and it's something that I wish we'd have started 20 years ago, so we'd be most of the way there by now. But we absolutely have to do this. And here to share some thoughts on the Go 100 PA plan, I've asked Pennsylvania State Representative Chris Rabb to come talk with us. Chris, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, my pleasure.
So walk me through this. The idea going to be we're going to get off the dirty stuff, no more burning stuff. We're going to get to renewables. 2050 is the year you've chosen to get to 100%. Is that possible?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, we can do this a lot sooner if we have the political will. That's a big if in Harrisburg, right?
Right.
We have more fossil fuel lobbyists. We have more fracking proponents than we have legislators. And we're the biggest full-time legislature in the country. But, you know, it's the wild, wild west in terms of, gifts and lobbying and campaign contributions that corrupt the legislative process and our priorities for our Commonwealth. You know, we are one of only two states in the nation that has a green amendment to our Constitution that demands environmental stewardship. We had a unanimous bipartisan constitutional amendment in 1971 to enshrine into our Constitution essentially environmental stewardship, but it only exists on paper because we're one of the biggest frackers. We're the second largest producer of fracked gas, second largest producer of coal, second largest producer of nuclear energy. And we are a net exporter to other states. So we're pushing this crap all over the country when we need to be investing in renewable energy. And that renewable energy future is well within our reach, and it will create good family-sustaining jobs
right. Without
all of the destruction, and not just to the environment, but to the workers, right? All the people who are working in hazardous environments, whether they're explicitly hazardous or all the invisible effects on public health. So when we look at the pandemic and we say there are all these folks who are immunocompromised and it's disproportionately Black and Brown who are suffering and most likely to be hospitalized and die, it's not because Black folk are genetically different than white folk. It's that environmental racism puts pollution and all these things closest to our communities so that our systems are compromised, which makes us a bigger target for the coronavirus. So all of these things are symptoms of systems of oppression that have to be addressed. So my remarks yesterday were contextualizing this environmental push and this climate action through the lens of social justice, racial justice, immigration justice, gender justice, economic justice, worker justice. All of these things are intertwined, and you cannot put a solar roof on your home and think that this is the salvation to the problems that haunt us. It is systems of oppression that are linked to all the things that are destroying this country and this planet.
No, I don't disagree with you. Look, I was a kid who grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland. I suffered horribly from asthma because we were in the dirty part of town. We were
That's
on the
right.
flight path of the airplanes coming into Johns Hopkins International Airport. We were the dumping ground for a lot of things.
That's right.
So poverty
right.
plays a huge part in this. The power lines go through poor neighborhoods. You never see them
That's
going
right.
through the good addresses. So I'm 100% with you. So how do we get there? And I guess the first question I got to ask is what is the definition now of renewable energy? Because a couple of years ago, people were trying to throw frack gas into renewable. Where are we throwing this?
Right. So that's a great question, right? Because, you know, once things catch on and they get sexy, everyone wants to get on the bandwagon and find a way to push their stuff in there. We're talking about things that are green and clean and replicable, renewable in the most basic sense. So frack gas is not one of those things, because there's a limited supply of that dinosaur juice deep below the ground, right? And we are infusing a deadly cocktail of chemicals to create fractures under the ground to release that shale gas. And then once it's burning, they say, oh, it's super clean. They don't talk about the process by which it is liberated from, you know, deep within the earth.
Right.
So it's a very specious statement. Now, there are ways to, like, for instance, hydrogen. So, oh, we need to invest in hydrogen. But you need a lot of energy to produce hydrogen. And so if the source of that production of hydrogen is renewable, then that's one thing. But you can use frack gas to create hydrogen, which doesn't really help. So there's a lot of double talk and greenwashing going on by industry folks, because they want to get on the bandwagon.
No, they want the bottom money. This is a huge new economy.
Huge, absolutely. And they're going to try to obfuscate and confuse and distract folks. Say, oh, this is clean. Like, look at all the commercials you see with these big, huge fossil fuel companies, and they're talking about how they're saving the earth and they're using algae and all kinds of stuff. It's a shell game. But here's the thing. We can do wind. We can do solar. And you know what's going to be huge in Pennsylvania? Is geothermal. Geothermal. You know, under every bit of surface across the globe, not too far down, it's 54 degrees, no matter how hot or cold it is.
Yep.
Right?
No, it's one of my goals down the road.
Yeah, and what's great about it is you can use the same displaced fossil fuel workers who know about drilling to repurpose all of those orphaned and abandoned wells, that there's tens of thousands of them in this state alone that could be repurposed for geothermal. So you're talking about similar equipment, similar skill sets, similar demographics in some of the most economically depressed areas of our state, particularly when the last coal mine shuts down, right? When the fracking era ends, and it's going to end sooner than a lot of people think. Certainly a lot of my colleagues in Harrisburg think that it's the golden goose that's going to keep laying these eggs, and it's not. I think Wall Street is fickle, as you know. I think they're going to turn their back on fracking, not because they're, you know, tree huggers like me, but because they see that it makes more sense to invest in renewables. And the prices, the cost of these components are going down dramatically. And we're going to get subsidies through the Biden administration, knock on wood. So then they're actually going to be competitive for the first time. But here's the last piece. Is going to bring it all together, which is very exciting, which is utility scale battery storage. So we can power our grids off of huge batteries that store energy from wind and solar when the wind stops blowing and the sun stops shining at night or on a cloudy day. So we won't have the type of blackouts and brownouts we're used to. The cost of these batteries is plummeting. And once it gets to a certain point, and I forget what that number is offhand, then fracking will be dead.
Right.
I think of fracking like I think of fax machines. Do you have a fax machine, Rick?
I don't know.
Oh, of course you don't. I don't either. I don't put a fax number on my business card anymore because I don't want anyone sending me a damn fax. Faxes have banned themselves, Rick. We don't need to say we need to ban faxing because emails ban faxing, right?
Correct.
Once there was a better technology that came along that was easy to use and it was cheaper and better, nobody's talking about faxing. So we don't have, you know, I have a lot of tree huggers in my district, and I use that as a term of endearment, by the way. I don't have anyone coming to me and saying we need to ban coal. Why? Because most folks think it is what? Obsolete.
It's dying on its own. And look, here in the Obama years, they kept saying Obama's killing coal. No,
right.
The frack gas did that, and eventually something will kill that. And hopefully we get to the place that we're, I think both of us want to get to. Because look, you know, back in 2011, we put solar panels on our house because the state, you know, had the Sunshine Fund, which gave a little bit of incentive. The federal government had a little bit of incentive. It made it a little bit more affordable. We could bring those costs down to make it a lot more affordable, and we can make those jobs good, family sustaining union jobs. We got an economy that can move in a good direction, in my view.
Absolutely. There is so much opportunity. It could revolutionize how we view energy, how we view economic development, and the folks who are most nervous and suspicious of, whether it's the Green New Deal, green collar jobs, renewables, whatever, they could and should be on the front lines of opportunity, because there is infrastructure that can be leveraged for a renewable future, right? If you're in coal country, and you have a coal-powered plant, and it's connected to a hub, to electricity transmission.
Right, to the grid.
And that coal, that facility is down, right? And it's repurposed as geothermal. It has a solar farm. You're using the same network. You're accessing those grid points that exist in those rural areas that were coal dominated at one point. And when we need the people, we have those folks, because there are going to be so many displaced workers, and they should be the first to get the new jobs for this new economy.
Clearly, because they've got the skills.
Only right.
Because they've got the skills for it. Now, here's
Absolutely.
My problem.
And it's not their fault if corporations leave them in the dust and the industry dies. That's not their fault, right? They've heated our homes and our businesses and our schools, right? They need to be protected. This is nothing against the workers, and obviously you know this, but this is something that has to be stated, particularly by Democrats, particularly by progressives. We are not in opposition to the folks who are trying to feed their families, and this was the best meaningful job they had in their area. We want to give them more opportunity.
Absolutely. No, I tell my friends in West Virginia, we can get you out of those coal mines and into something else, making renewable solar panels or wind turbines or whatever. And your standard of living would probably get better as a community, because it would probably mean more jobs. But here's my problem. My problem is 2011, we went and put solar panels on our house, and this has been my experience. Our legislature let us down. Because they allowed the solar energy renewable energy credits to go through the floor. We're back in 2011, an SREC credit was about $250 a credit. Now it's like $8. Whole model of which that investment was built, Republicans allowed to get to destroy. And I say it was Republicans outside of Chris Ross, who was the only Republican who said, hey, we need to do something about the energy portfolio, because it was them. They're the ones who killed solar in this state. My problem is how do we build a system that doesn't get stuck in these political winds, that you can have one party destroy it when they get control?
Well, that's going to change once the winds shift, right? Because think about it like this. Just think about cannabis.
Once the wind shifts.
Pun intended. Seriously, though, think about cannabis, right? Democrats are, well, more recently are for it. Republicans have been against it since really the, you know, generation. Okay? But now they see how much money is being made, and they want a piece of it. Why do they want a piece of it? I mean, because it's huge. And then that includes hemp.
Yeah,
and you got states like Kentucky that are, you know, a national leader in industrial hemp. They see dollars and cents, and pretty soon, very soon, cannabis will not be a partisan issue. And we can look at different examples where that's the case, because it's been monetized to the point where everyone can get a piece. Now, I'm not saying that is inherently good, but that is the trajectory.
That's how you see it.
For renewables, right? And also, So I represent 65,000 people in Northwest Philly. If any of my fellow state reps anywhere in the state, if they have a new big employer in their backyard, and they're creating jobs that haven't been created in generations, and it happens to be a solar business, then you better believe that conservative Republican is going to be for solar.
Yeah. No, you're right.
Right. I mean, it's just basic self-interest.
Yeah.
Basic self-interest, and that's going to happen.
No, and so legislatively, what are we doing to move something? Because obviously nothing is going to get through the House and Senate in this session,
right,
given the makeup and the complexity of who controls what.
Right.
What was the point of this press conference yesterday? And then what's the direction you want folks to go?
Sure. Well, you know, a lot of the work we have to do in the interim is letting suspicious or how should I say this politely, wishy-washy Democrats who are not up on the science, who are not particularly well-versed in this, to understand that this is not just feasible. We have to do it.
That's imperative.
So it's imperative, an imperative. And I have Democratic colleagues who are co-sponsors of my bill who don't really believe that we can get to 100% renewable, because they've been so inundated by the fossil fuel lobbyists who say, oh, this is not possible, and they're believing the naysayers, and they're really just not optimistic about what's possible. And I'm not an optimist by nature. I'm actually mildly allergic to optimism. But I believe in science, and I believe in the facts, and I believe, and I'm a student of history, and I know this. I have 16 great-great-grandparents, all of whom were born into a society where slavery was the law of the land. So all of my grandparents' grandparents were Black, most of whom were enslaved from as far south as Mississippi to far north as Manhattan. All 16 of my great-great-grandparents died free. It didn't just happen. They weren't waiting for Abraham Lincoln. There were 200,000 Black folk who were part of the Civil War in the Union forces. There were abolitionists. There were folks who did everything they could every day to resist in one way or the other. And it took generations. It took generations for this type of liberation. No one thought it was possible except for the folks who said, I can't live shackled. I must be free. And it took them a long time. I don't know when we're going to have this bill enacted into law, but I do know we can't just wait. We have to keep pushing the envelope and put our flag in the sand and say, this is the right thing right now, and so that other people will catch up to us.
Yep.
Because otherwise, the folks who are afraid of change, they win, right? We have to resist. This is how all major social movements have been victorious. People have stood up against the odds and spoken truth to power and organized and informed each other and collaborated to get it done. So I am convinced that we can get it done. I can't tell you when it's going to happen, but I can tell you that more and more people are opening up to this. And a lot of folks are listening to the younger generations who say, look, we are inheriting, you know, your messed up, you know, boomers, Generation X, and we expect more of you. So I'm doing this for my kids.
Yep. No,
this for my prospective grandkids.
I tweeted this out yesterday. You know, I hope in 50 years my kids don't wake up today and say F Joe Manchin, because they're roasting
right
on this planet because we didn't get anything done. So I
That's
hope
right.
folks will go to the website, go100pa.com. That's the website, go100pa.com.
Yep.
We'll get links out on social media. Follow Senate Bill 872, House Bill 100. We'll make sure we get stuff out. That also the hashtag go100PA. I'll follow that along. Chris, I appreciate the time. I hope you'll come back as this continues down the path. Keep us up to the date on the new exciting developments, technologies, all that stuff to keep us on the
Will
cutting
do.
Edge.
Thank you, Rick.
Good stuff. Pennsylvania State Representative Chris Rabb. Again, check out the website, go100pa.com. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.